I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Sean Amos is a musician, singer, and songwriter. He's a record producer and an online blogger. Few areas of the entertainment world are unfamiliar to him. Now, that's partly because of his own career experience, but partly because of his dad, Wally Amos, who was a talent agent and personal manager before he became famous for his cookies. Famous Amos cookies. Now, Sean Amos is here with us to talk about his new album, Harlem, and whatever else is on his mind. We know there are some other things on his mind. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Why Harlem and why now? In fact, there's an interesting backstory to this. You composed these songs quite a long time ago. So why now?
I wrote Harlem and recorded it about 10 years ago. At the same time, I was working as an A&R executive at Rhino Records. And I produced a box set called Rhapsodies in Black, which is a 4-CD disc box of spoken word and music from the Harlem Renaissance period. And I had a real passion for it. And it was sort of it helped a lot. It helped me a lot to work through some self-identity stuff. And at the same time I was producing that box, I recorded these songs quite privately and shared them with a few friends. And the mixture of sort of the autobiographical nature of it, and it was a pretty twangy-sounding record, a lot of banjos and acoustic guitars. And it felt like it didn't quite fit into what was going on at the time. And I put it away. I think I was partly afraid to reveal that much of myself. I think that I didn't want to fight a battle of trying to convince somebody that, you know, no, it really does make sense. You just have to listen to it.
Yeah, trying to convince somebody that your baby is cute.
Yeah.
No.
As a father of three, I can relate to that. Yeah. So I stuck it away and I moved on to other things. And flash forward to last year, my oldest daughter, who's 9, tripped upon this record. And she was playing in her room and took a lot of pride in daddy's recordings. And she was singing along to some of the songs. And it got me thinking about the record again on a number of levels. Like, wow, I'm not that guy anymore, but I kind of feel a lot of the same things. And wow, how far I've come. And also, the music made a lot more sense now than it made then. Things have happened, and that make the record seem less of a fish out of water now than it did then.
You think people are more accepting of different genres
in a
way?
Yeah, particularly with black artists. I mean, I think, you know, there was a time when, early 90s for sure, where if you weren't a hip-hop artist, it was sort of tough to be a black artist.
You know, it's interesting that family, the theme of family is central to this album, and also it's this album being birthed, it seems to me. A number of the songs on the album speak to that search for place, to find a place where you feel at home. I'm thinking about Independence Day, and I'm so excited that you brought your guitar because I'm hoping we'll hear
absolutely
something. Are you going to play Independence Day for us?
Yeah.
Is that what you feel like playing?
Yeah.
Okay. This is Sean Amos, and he's singing Independence Day. It's from his new album called Harlem.
Independence Day, 1921. Miller's bending over cotton in the Carolina sun. His back is broken. The Southern Star's fallen by a firecracker fuse. Never did believe when they told us to our face. Those days are over. We're strangers in this land. Still, we're strangers in this land. Still, well, yes, I'll see a plane, I'll quote the words of Mr. Hughes. America's never been America to me. And yet I swear this oath is long as I can breathe. America will be a seed that grows deep in the heart of me. Deep in the heart of me. We're going up to the promised land. Going up. Going up to Harlem. I'm going to Harlem.
Sean Amos, singing Independence Day is on his new album, Harlem. Sean, you were telling us a minute ago that you're not that guy anymore. Do you still feel that way? That America has never been America to me? It's just a dream. You still feel that way?
You know, I realize that a lot of the themes on the record, themes of otherness, themes of sort of looking for your tribe, are more universal than what I thought them to be at the time I wrote the record. So while I feel infinitely more comfortable in my own skin, literally and figuratively, I still feel that for a lot of people, they feel an otherness. That line of we're strangers in this land speaks to a lot of different groups and a lot of different circumstances, whereas at the time, it was pretty much about me.
Well, it is. It's interesting. It is the personal story against the backdrop of the larger story. In fact, the cover art I wanted to mention is an African-American man, and his mouth is painted over, and his eyes are covered with blue stars, and his mouth is kind of covered with a white and red stripe, so kind of like evoking a flag. And it looks like one of those classic like 19th century portraits of an African-American man. And there is a theme, like some of the songs about Vicksburg, Southern man, blackface, it does speak to the African-American struggle sort of more broadly.
Yeah.
But then on a more personal level, that feeling of not fitting in, why do you think you felt that?
Yeah, it was on a number of levels. You know, one, because of my father's success and his fame, which occurred at my formative years, he was able to have me live a kind of life that he was not able to live. And so I lived in fairly well-to-do white neighborhoods, and I went to private schools, and I was the only black face in the crowd from the time I was born until the time I was in high school. On another level, I had a mother who was severely mentally ill, and I couldn't, and the line between reality and fantasy was a very blurry one growing up for me. That didn't help either. And then I guess the third part of it is that I had a father who, like a lot of men of his generation, he was ultimately a hustler, and he was hustling and making this thing happen, and his career came first. And so
went around a lot.
Running around, wasn't around a lot, and even when he was around, wasn't present, and a lot of my thing was about, hello, I'm here.
So you were kind of lightly parented.
I was the quintessential latchkey kid,
yeah,
for sure. And so all those things really left me sort of like, the ship without a rudder. And I had to figure this stuff out with no one to sort of turn to. So that's sort of the conversation that's been going on in my head for a long time.
If you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're speaking with singer, songwriter, and record producer Sean Amos. We're talking about his new record, Harlem. Picking up on that thread, you've published a very, I would have to say, very poignant series of articles for Huffington Post about your upbringing. What do you call it? Cookies and milk?
Cookies and milk. Scenes from a 70s Hollywood childhood.
And there's this crazy picture of your dad in a caftan or like a floor-length dashiki? And he seems to be mixing up some of his famous cookies, cookie dough. And here you are in a little dashiki and a cowboy hat and some sandals. It's very groovy.
Nothing says 70s like dashikis and cowboy hats.
Nothing says 70s like dashiki. But you talked about, you had this very privileged childhood in some ways. But before that, there was a lot of chaos and, disorder attached to it. I mean, you talked about at some point, living on Sunset Strip, which was...
Yeah, it was a little...
Where, frankly, a lot of your kind of maternal figures were the prostitutes in the neighborhood or the sex workers and so forth. And then to go from there, right, that was the early period, I guess, before your dad hit it, right? And then to being kind of well off.
Yeah.
It must have been very confusing.
It was a fairly schizophrenic, life. I mean, literally and figuratively. My mother suffered from schizoaffective disorder, so she was quite literally, living in a lot of different worlds. And my life was a lot of different worlds. I could be at a comedy store one night with my father and, the next morning be waiting for my carpool on the corner with hookers getting dropped off from their night at work. The cookie store he opened on Sunset Boulevard, his first store, was on Sunset near Formosa, near La Brea. And at the time, it was not a happening spot. there were all sorts of bizarre characters who used to float in and out of there, drug dealers and vice squad folks. And so it was pretty no holds barred, upbringing. And at the time, it didn't seem that unusual. I mean, it's only you look back at these things, but what prompted me to write this, again, was my kids. And I was thinking one day, God, my daughter will never, when she turned 8, I'm like, when I was 8, like the stuff I saw at the age of 8, like it's nowhere on my daughter's roadmap at all. I mean, and so to realize that the things she will never see or never encounter, because times have changed, because of how she's growing up differently, because of my commitment to parenthood. That was a really profound thing, and I wanted to sort of document that in part for her and them, and in part, again, to help sort of reconcile this thing inside of me.
I was curious, though, why you decided to talk about these things at this time, because I'm sure that a lot of people will, they can conjure your father's face, like, no problem. You know, they can see the cookies, right, with his picture on it looking really smiling and happy, and he looks like, forgive me, you know, like how Uncle Ben for some people conjures these feelings of warmth and joy. Was there any of that for you, or was it all just loneliness and, you know, needing a parent to be there who wasn't there?
You know, it totally was. I mean, you know, at the time, I didn't realize what I was missing until I created it as an adult for my own children. So if you talked to me back then, I wouldn't have, you know, snuck away and go, oh my God, get me out of here, it's crazy. I felt I had a fairly normal upbringing because kids adapt.
You know, a lot of people think that great art comes from great pain. Do you think that that's true?
Yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, there's no. I mean, I think great art comes from extreme feelings, whether it's extreme joy, extreme pain, extreme fear. I think going to those extremes brings out some pretty beautiful and frightening, you know, and illustrative stuff. So I used to think, yeah, I had to perform from a place of pain, and I don't think that anymore. The hardest thing is to think you're alone, right? The hardest thing is to think, I'm the only one going with this, no one else. And I think by sharing stories, you realize we all have more in common than we think, and that's comforting.
What are you going to play now?
I'm going to play Mean as You.
Mean as You. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so it's funny. I wrote this song actually for my grandmother. She was mean.
Oh, dear.
My father's mother, Ruby. Ruby Amos was a domestic who grew up in Tallahassee, Florida, and she was a tough, mean, old, illiterate woman, and was, you know, from the day she was born to the day she died.
Well.
And she was a victim of her, you know, circumstance, and she cleaned people's houses during the day and, you know, came home at night and
was mean
and was mean, and my father loved her regardless. And it's funny, she had to be banned from my father's cookie store because she would harass the customers.
Okay. To do what? To buy more or buy less?
Someone would be smacking their food, you know, and close, shut your mouth, it was a trip. Anyway, she passed away, and I saw how it affected my father, and that was it was profound. Like how someone so mean could, and this is the refrain of the song, how someone who's so mean could actually mean so much to somebody.
Okay, let's hear it. Mean as You. Here it is, Sean Amos from his new album, Harlem.
Old Ruby just lying there. In her sleep, she's unaware. Took a strong hit to the chest to bring that woman down. But I guess I'm the lucky one, 'cause to see me this way, you'd slap me and say, boy, stop all that whimpering. Didn't I teach you anything? And I never met anyone who could mean so much to me and be as mean as you. Be as mean as you. Be as mean as you. I never know anyone who means so much to me. And be so goddamn mean. Be as mean as you. Be as mean as you. Goodbye, my baby.
that's Sean Amos singing Mean As You. It's on his new album, Harlem. So what's next? You seem like you figured some things out.
Game over.
What are you going to do now?
I'm going to finish working on the cookies and milk stuff.
What do you mean, a memoir? Are you going to write the pieces that you published in Huffington Post are kind of like the opening foray into the memoir.
And I'm working with an unlikely collaborator, Garcelle Beauvais, who's an actress, to produce a film version of it.
Garcelle Beauvais, we've seen her on NYPD Blue.
Yep, right, exactly.
The prosecutor. And she's the really cute one.
She's a very, very cute prosecutor. The cutest prosecutor you'll ever want. So we're working together on a film about this and playing the songs and taking them around and being a dad.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Good luck with everything. Maybe when the memoir comes out, you'll come and see us again and tell us more about the story of Wally and all that went into making Sean Amos, Sean Amos. Sean Amos is a singer, songwriter, record producer, and blogger. His new album is called Harlem, and he was kind enough to join us in our studios in Washington, D.C. Sean Amos, thanks so much for joining
us. Thank you.
Program for today, Tell Me More, is produced by Grant Clark, Bridget DeShagas, Lori Grant, Lee Hill, Sanaz Meshkinpour, Veronica Miller, Emily Oxenschlager, Amita Parasher, and Amy Ta. Our editors are Kyle McKinnon and Devar Ardalan. The program is directed by Monica Evstatieva and Arjun Hutchins. Our senior producer is Alicia Montgomery. Our intern is Rachel Otwell. Our technical director is Kimberly Jones. She had a hand this week from Neil Tivolt. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior editor is Portia Robertson-Migas. The executive producer is Tashima Walker. And remember, to tell us more, you can always go to npr.org and find us under the Programs tab. You can also follow us on Twitter. Just look for Tell Me More NPR. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more tomorrow.